me get it so she's going here. Today is January the 15th, 1987. I'm Steve Frangos. I'm in Palmdale, Florida. I'm with Mr. Tom Gaskin here at the Cypress Knee Museum, or at least I'm on the other side where the tour is, and we're just talking in general about things.
This Cypress Knee thing, there's been packed people, and...
That's that traffic, it's all right.
And, Lord knows how many states in the business.
Yeah.
And there was one man in the business in Louisiana that had every reason to stay in the business somehow or other back during the war. He came by here, and he said that he supplied Cypress Knees to 900 government hospitals.
Hmm. What would they use Cypress Knees for in a hospital?
Therapy.
Well, to work with them?
In the hospitals. For the boys that was wounded.
Yeah.
And hurt or some way or other or whatever.
Yeah.
They got to have trouble. They got troubles, you know.
Yeah.
And anyway, this fella, all he did was just cut Cypress Knees and he had an in. And he was, let's see, I forget his name now, but I think I could find his name. But he was in Louisiana, and he lasted sometime after the war, but now, as I understand, he's been out of business for some time. The Cypress Knee thing is the most precarious business to make go. It is a seasonal thing, and it is there's more to it than meets the eye, and in regard to have them as nice as they are, you've got to play your seasons. You can't produce what you see here, except and it'd be worth having, except in January, February, March, and almost the day after March comes the new growth on the wood, and it doesn't look like these pretty things you see here. I could get one and show you. I'll show you in a minute.
All right, sir.
And also, you've got a problem of mildew, etc. Then you've got a problem of selling and collecting the money for. Anyway, there have been thousands, I say many thousands, of people from San Antonio, Texas, clear around to Rhode Island that have attempted the Cypress Knee business and learned there was something else, that was smarter to do something else.
Yeah.
And I would never have stayed with it if I had not been raised in the gator roach killer business. And I learned my selling, I learned advertising, I learned promotion, and I have been able to make it go. But I don't know if anybody else to this day that's in the business. And I can't, when I've got trouble, you see, when I first started this, I thought about having sales offices in Europe.
Huh.
That was my idea.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I sold to Macy's. One of the first stores that ever sold was John Wanamaker in Philadelphia. I wrote department stores the first thing. My idea was to get established in the business up north before people down here where the Cypress Knees were learned about it, because I thought it was going to take off, which it didn't do. And I showed it to the New York World's Fair in New York.
What year?
39 and 40. And the state of Florida cooperated beautifully. They gave me a place to show my knees there in the Florida exhibit, and untold thousands of people went through and admired, and many of them bought. But you know, it costs money to live away from home and so forth.
Sure.
But anyway, I did display there 2 years, and Macy put me on the radio, and I then I sold in Macy's store and et cetera. But anyway, that's everything. It died out. And right now, to this day, though I used to sell to Silver Springs and Cypress Gardens and so forth, I'm not man enough to sell to stores. And and to get people that can do this work, it's almost absolutely impossible.
What do you mean in the sense of what is so difficult about selling to stores? And I have no idea what's involved, so it's a real, you know.
You've got to be able to sharpen saws. You've got to be able to sharpen axes. You've got to be able to handle all kinds of tools. You've got to know when to cook them, how long to cook them, and how to preserve them after they have been cooked. Then you've got to peel them, and it takes nothing but, like for instance, the skill of a wood carver. The skill of a wood carver is utilized. In the museum, there is a cypress knee. It's 9.5 feet tall, and there's a hole in it, about 8 feet hole. It took me personally 4 days to make that hole. And I tried many people here, tried to get them to I tell them, how you do this knee this way, you do the next knee another way, and you do the next knee another way. And to this day, my son is a very poor knee carver. And he was born in, when was it, 52, I think.
He must be 34 now.
No, wait, he's born that. He's born in, isn't that the devil? No, he was born in, good God, I'm losing my cotton picking mind. He was
That's
born
right.
in, let's see, my daughter was born in, they were both born in the 30s. I got too much on my mind.
That's right. Well, then he's probably 52 as an age.
Oh, he's about 50 now.
That's right. Yeah, right. As an age. That's right.
And he is he's with it. He's staying with it. And I have hopes I hope he continues it.
That's right, of course.
And I would like to see his children continue it, because it's a good, healthy, respectable, fine, nice thing for people
sure.
to do. I think it's good, mm-hmm. good.
Well, and it's unique.
That's, well, yeah, it's good. But now my grandson, he says he's going to be a lawyer. I see, this is not no big money thing. Anyway, I'm just laying it on the line the way it is. And
well,
it's, mm-hmm. but there were people. Now you can check around in Orlando, for instance, Orlando. Orlando has always been the hotbed of people being in the Cypress Knee thing. And I bought knees from them up there. They're knees in the museum that I bought from people in the Cypress Knee business. Now there are. I'll tell you something else that used to go. That sort of, now this is sort of along your line, more so than the Cypress Knees are,
mm-hmm.
and that's these chairs, Cypress chairs. And there's an outfit in southern edge of Orlando near the Gator Place there. That it's a family thing. And they have sold those chairs since the beginning of time, and at different times have been many people make Cypress chairs. And it's closer to what you're thinking about, I think, than what the knees have been.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can do, you don't have to nurse the chairs like you do the Cypress knee. A chair can have skin places on the you trim it off like this.
Mm-hmm.
See that you can trim that thing there. You can trim the bark off, and in a chair, it's not a delicate piece of bark like this Cypress knee thing is.
That's right.
All right, I think I've sort of talked out. Unless you
I'm just sort of interested in. Now, you said you started this in 1934?
Yes, sir.
When in 1934, do you remember?
Yes, it was shortly after I was married that one day my mother-in-law, this is, I remember all this to the, I mean, to the gnat's eyebrow. She says, Tom, next time you're down the swamp, I wish you'd get me a cypress knee. She thought they were hollow. She says, I asked John Whidden to get me one, and he never did. He was her other son-in-law, one of her son-in-laws, and he never did. So I'd then turned to my wife. See, I'd been around them, but I was barely conscious that they existed. Just barely, because I'd hunted. I was on this creek, the first time I was on this creek, I was 7 years old.
What's the name of this creek here?
Michigan Creek. That was 1916 or 17, something like that, right? Mm-hmm. 16, 17 or 18. And I killed my first turkey in the Big Cypress Swamp in Hokelege Swamp in 1920. Those dates I know about that. And, my mother-in-law says, I wish you'd get me a cypress knee. I want to use it for a flower vase. She thought they were hollow. Now, here's the way. And I turned to my wife then. I says, that's something else that'll sell. Just like that, looking for something to sell. And I went out in the swamp, and I cut a cypress knee, and it was solid. I cut another one. Solid. Cut several of them. They were all solid. I says, oh, well, pipe dream. That's the end of that. And I went back, and I was laying in bed at night when I should have been asleep, and I was thinking about it. I says, golly, I thought them damn things was hollow. And the dictionary said they're hollow. All the dictionaries, all encyclopedias, everything that was written about, everything that's been written on Cypress Knee said they were hollow. I'm digressing here just a little bit, and I'm purely guessing, but I think, you know, the Acadians, long time ago, it wouldn't surprise me if certain knees hadn't been used. I have no proof of it, nothing like that. But it wouldn't, I'm just imagining, it That's wouldn't right. surprise me if hollow knees maybe had been used in colonial days for beehives or something like that, maybe. But anyway, I thought to myself, I said, well, maybe if I bumped them, why, they would sound hollow. So I went back out in the swamp and I'd bump them. No. So I says, well, pipe dream, that's the end of that. I forgot all about it. I left it, but I've always been a wood carver.
Yeah.
And
where'd you learn how to carve wood?
It used to be that everybody in this in Arcadia on Saturday, you could go down the street there and the people would be lined up whittling with piles of trimmings this high. Hmm. People on Saturday.
Yeah,
but well, maybe not.
Yeah, I know, but that's so and so.
But everybody used to whittle in Arcadia. It was a... This is the man, Jim.
Hi.
How you doing, man?
Marcus. Frank.
Yeah, Steve Frankos.
Frankos. I get names, but...
That's okay.
Pepsi, we're talking about this thing.
Okay, what thing?
Knee thing.
I'm going to the house to the grocery store.
Goodbye. Wasn't there something over there you needed to get that we don't have? I don't remember now what it was. There's something, but why don't you phone if you could? Let me see. Oh, Lord, there's something. Anyway, goodbye. You can phone me before you come back. If
everything will be closed.
If can't, all right, then forget it. Forget it. Goodbye.
Except the grocery store. I'll stick it in the mail over there.
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
Now let's see, where were we? About the beginning of the thing. Now,
everybody, what you learn how to whittle or?
Everybody in Arcadia. See, I carry now, and I carry now three pocket knives.
Huh.
And Each blade is good for different things. This one here will should shave. I haven't sharpened it in some time, but...
Yeah, it does. It cuts hairs off a man's leg, that's right.
Right. It shaves a little bit. But anyway, I'm a carver. I'm a wood carver.
Okay.
Now there is a thing. It used to be that everybody carried a knife, and that there were a lot more wood carvers then. There are wood. Did you know about the wood carving industry?
It's
spread across this country.
No, sir, I never heard that. No.
There are two magazines.
Uh-huh.
Shall I?
Yeah. Sure.
No, I'll go get you. As I was saying, it used to be in Arcadia.
Uh-huh.
And I remember Arcadia before it had paved streets.
Hmm.
And everybody almost put it. Now here is a magazine devoted to nothing but wood carving.
Mm-hmm. Chip and chaps.
Chip chaps. Now here's another one.
Mallet.
The mallet. And it's devoted to nothing but wood carving. Now can you imagine, just to give you an idea of what a thing this wood carving is, and you can turn
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, just by flipping through, we're looking at the various pictures.
It's
someone did John Wayne, yeah.
Can you imagine anybody taking a pocket knife or any kind of a thing and putting that expression in a piece of wood?
Yeah.
I think that is just utterly, utterly fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm a good precision carver, but I couldn't no more do that than I could flap my arms and fly.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm not bad, but I'm not to be compared with the... Now, I've got something that'll beat anything on that page.
Huh.
Bad.
What is it?
Bad. Beat something. Beat anything, any carving on that page.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's like chains and stuff is what it is.
Well,
wooden chains are...
It's that kind of a type thing, mm-hmm. but it's just more intricate. It's mm-hmm. just more... It's like I have a thing like this,
mm-hmm.
and inside that are four posts, and inside the four posts, there's a little ball. Would you like to see it?
Sure, yes, sir. Yes, sir, okay.
Now, the Chinese, they carve in ivory, and they carve things from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one generation, somebody will work on this carving and pass it on to the next generation.
You got to keep working on it, I'm
right,
saying.
For that same thing. So you can have that if that's any good for you. But
thank you, sir.
That was long before the museum was even dreamed of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me give you back. Let me digress back on that, how this thing got started. As I say, my mother-in-law.
Yeah. Why did she think?
What I'm coming to.
Yeah.
Where did she get her idea?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right. Now here is where she got her idea.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of hers was the wife of a sawmill man,
mm-hmm.
and in getting to timber to saw up trees, they built a road into a cypress swamp. And knees and things was just cut and piled helter skelter out of the way to get through there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the knees was hollow, as some of them are. I've got knees in the museum that's been hollow for 1,000 years.
Well,
fire.
Fire.
Fire. Lightning. Since the beginning of time, we've had fire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when it, one burns, the top burns, and the part that burns decays, and the new growth heals up around the dead.
Oh, I see.
And
so
you look there, and I can show you out here in the swamp. Mm-hmm. There are places in this swamp where you can see knees at a hollow that's been there for 200 or 300 years.
Yeah.
Hmm. I mean, the fire could have come that many hundred years ago. So, this man, who was a sawmill man, he saw this and he saw a knee with a hollow in it, and he says, I bet my wife would like to have that to put flowers in or something. So he took it home to her, and my mother-in-law saw it. And that's how that come.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way knees came to be peeled, now I was working with knees for about 2 years. 2 years before a knee was ever peeled, the idea that it was non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was cutting knees at Fort Ogden.
Yeah, I know that.
And I was cutting a knee that was in the center, sort of, had other knees wrapped around it, and it was hard to cut. And that day, those days, I was cutting only with an axe to get to them. And the other knees was in the way, I'd been working on the thing 20 minutes or something like that for a long time. And finally, the knee fell over, and part of the bark peeled up from it, because I didn't cut through the bark all the way.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. That's right.
And I was just sick at my stomach, because there I'd ruined something. I said, my God, there I've ruined something. But,
you've been working at this, right? Yeah.
Right, all that effort, you know. Then I picked it up, and I looked at it, and I thought, well, that's pretty. All I got to do is peel them. Then I got two things to sell, looking for something to sell.
Yeah, that's right.
And then when I got back to the house, I got my knees ready to, unload the truck and so forth.
That's right.
Came upon that thing again, and I thought about it, and I said, by golly, that's something. So then I started trying to peel it. And I got in trouble. I mean, no soap. Couldn't do it. But I kept on thinking. I tried dipping them in lye and gasoline and kerosene and oil and all sorts of things. I tried every way in the world. And then I wrote a letter to the Bureau of Standards in Washington, and they refer and asked them how to peel, get the bark off of wood. And they referred my letter to the Forest Products Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin, and they wrote back and said they thought that the most practicable way to get bark off would be to put them in water near the boiling point for about 2 hours. And I have that letter to this day.
Excellent,
and that's
yeah.
been over 50 years ago. Well, write it 50 years ago. I have every letter that I've ever received, almost every letter I've ever received, or a copy of every one I have ever written on both my turkey call and the cypress knee thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lots of them that are interesting letters. But anyway, that
yes,
is
sir.
How come knees to be peeled.
Yeah, now you were saying to me that there were two things. I mean, before cypress knees were peeled, all right, what were cypress knees used for? I mean, how did they...
I can show you. I have right now.
Yes, sir.
A wall vase. The first thing I ever made was a wall vase.
Mm-hmm.
To hang it on the wall, point down with the bark on. And finally, it took me a long time, and I went to everybody in Arcadia. Lewis Bishop used to be run a machine shop there, and Noah Little was I went to everybody that knew anything about doing anything, and finally, with their help, as I tried to bore holes in knees, I didn't know then anything about grinding a drill. You've got a drill, if you don't grind it just right, you try to push it in that stick there, and it'll just coast, or it'll grab.
Yeah.
One of the two, it's got to be just right. And then I learned, anyway, I learned all that, and finally I figured out, with the help of everybody in Arcadia, that knew how to do anything, I figured out how to put this hole in the cypress knees. And I was in it, I don't know how many years I was in it before. Nobody got in it until after knees were peeled. Then there was and I used to sell Silver Spring Cypress Gardens and Moss Brothers and Burdines and all over the state. Sell to, you know, to stores.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold Wanamaker. I sold him before anywhere ever peeled, and they didn't sell nothing. I consigned it to him. I didn't get the money, I just consigned it. But still, it was very encouraging to me that a store like John Wanamaker of Philadelphia would get as far as it did. And I became a good friend of the man. He later retired down here and would come to see us here. But anyway, he was a marvelous man. He gave me encouragement. I started to quit a couple of times, and he discouraged me. He told me to stay with it. Anyway, I'm still with it.
Yeah.
Okay. What is? I
know. We're
go ahead. No, I don't know.
No, yes, sir. No.
I feel no pain.
Okay.
I mean, I can talk on and on and talk to you in any way you want to.
All right.
My mother and father. My father said I'd. See, my mother and father invented Gator Roach Killer.
Yeah, could you tell me about that?
And it sold, it's not doing very well now. I don't know why. I own a fourth of it, but I don't have anything to do with it. My brother, I've got my nose in it, and that thing. what was I going to say? I don't know what I was going to say.
Well, how did the business start? How did your mother and dad come to invent Gator Roach?
Gator Roach Killer?
Yes, sir.
All right. I will tell you that. That's a very interesting story. My father was in the seed business.
Seed?
Seed and fertilizer.
Fertilizer.
Seed and fertilizer. At one time, he had a store in Arcadia, Wachula, Fort Myers, and Moorhaven.
Mm-hmm.
Four seed stores. And he was a truck farmer. He was one of these gamblers. And he at one time had at a place called Bear Beach, which on Lake Okeechobee, which I understand is near, close to Clewiston now. He had 365 acres of cabbage planted. And it was supposed to produce about a ton to the acre. And it was worth then, I think, how many acres did I say? 365. And I think it was worth around $1,000 a ton. So anyway, there was $365,000 worth of cabbage. At 10 o'clock in the morning on the 10th day of April, for the first time in the history of Florida, or since, as I understand it, you could hear them things popping at 10 o'clock in the morning. So then he says, by damn the bugs against the farmer, the commission man is against the farmer, the price is against the farmer, everybody, the weather's against the farmer, and hell with it. And my dad was sort of a chemist, a half-ass chemist, you might say. He didn't know very much, but he knew a little bit. And because he had to do that to be in the seed business. To give people sell seeds that would kill this bug, that bug, and the other bug, and
yeah.
So forth. So
we're fine.
When I was a very young child, they caught me crawling on the floor before I could walk. They caught me trying to eat a dead roach, and they never forgot that. And so, when my dad went broke in the seed business thing, he decided to make a roach killer and sell that. They thought about floundering around what to do to make money, you know. And roaches were all over the country. So anyway, he and my mother put together the thing called Gator Roach Hive. My dad built the formula. My mother come up, did most of the thinking on the what they called the hive, the brown thing that the thing is in. And so anyway, that's the way that came up. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in that business.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to sell roach killer. And that's how come me to be in this business, because when my mother-in-law said what she did, I turned to my wife and I said, that's something else to sell, because I was looking for something to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I'm just talking now through my turkey call. I say I could be wrong, but I say I believe I've sold 250,000 of turkey calls.
Mm-hmm.
I even sold two of them, $20 worth, to a man in Alaska that lived on the Alaska Canadian border, and he's going to use them on moose. And I got a book in there that where 54 people have written the book. That is, 54 people wrote their story and put all the stories in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And in that they tell about the calling up bear, deer, panther, wildcat, and people. I've had 6 friends shot using it.
Gee whiz.
I kid you not. It's a dangerous thing.
Yeah.
With all the people hunting today. And turkeys have really covered the United States.
Yeah.
I was talking with a man the other day from Indiana, with the Indiana Game Department, and he said that he saw a bunch of over 300 turkeys in Missoula.
Mm.
And I have, all my life, I've hunted, I never saw more than, my guess is around 60, 65 turkeys. Anyway, the turkeys are all over the United States and going into Canada.
Now, sir, you're selling, of course, the turkey call. Were you the one that invented it, or how
yes,
does this work?
Yes, mm-hmm. I did invent it, and I started. And I can tell you how that came about. There's a story there, but I invented the turkey call with the hole in it, with the hole in it where it works like a violin, and you have a stopper and so forth. I invented that. And I started to get a patent on it. But I've had some experience with patents. I have 14, by the way. And I remember when my mother and father had trouble had Gator Roach Killer patented. And the people imitated, so they had to go and go to court. And they had to sue the man, and it cost us several $1,000s. Lawyers' costs and so forth.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, I says, well, the best thing for me to do is take what money I've got and put it into advertising instead of putting it into getting a patent.
Yeah, interesting.
So that's why I do not have a patent on that thing. But nobody else, the record speaks. I first advertised it in Field and Stream in 1947. I first made it in 1946. I first advertised it in 47, and then in 48 I used Field and Stream, Sports and Field, Outdoor Life, and something else. I forget what other magazine. But anyway, I did not patent that. I have 14 patents, and they don't grant a patent. It's not practical. If they don't think it's, I mean, if it's,
yeah, serviceable,
if it's nuts, they don't grant it.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're all right. The patents are all right. I've not promoted them. I've not backed them up like I should have. These days, I think some of them will pay off.
Yeah. Well, now, what? When you say you've done 14 different things, what sort of things have you patented? Is it in line with the cypress wood, or is it completely different?
No. I don't know whether I ought to say this or not, but I invented a outboard motor. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, a ball and socket thing. You know what a ball and socket is?
Well, yes, sir.
You know what a ball and socket is?
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know how we'll be using an outboard motor, but yeah, I know what a ball and socket is.
All right, but,
yes,
but if you understand the ball and socket.
Yes, sir.
Well, if you had a ball and socket that was 100 feet in diameter.
Yes.
You could put a pretty big engine in that, couldn't you? A pretty big motor in that, couldn't you?
Sure, yeah, of course.
Well, you could hang that on a ship, a submarine.
Yeah, sure. It'd be a big thing. It'd be like a Volkswagen. I mean, it'd be just bigger.
I'm talking about.
It'd be
that's
a real big
I'm
thing. Yeah.
About. So, I mean, there's no limit to how big it could be.
Yeah.
You could put it on a big ship on the ocean. You could have a
sure.
ball and socket in the front and a ball and socket in the back.
Sure.
You could make that. You could turn that big ocean liner around like a top, couldn't you?
If it was big enough, sure. I mean, yeah.
Okay. All right. That's one of them. I got it. Signed, sealed, and delivered. The Navy might be using it right now and not say a goddamn word to me.
That's right.
Yeah. Could be. I don't say that it is. I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
But it's not stupid.
Yeah.
It's a workable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take on a little rowboat. I mean, you know, a little small boat. You could have that thing of bow and socket there. You could just turn that thing around just any way you want to, and it wouldn't be near as complicated as what they're using now. But anyway, you ask me. Then
yes,
I've got to solve that thing, which is a series of knife blades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a knife blade will cut, and so instead of having the sharp point on each side, you've got a blade here, and opposite side, you've got a staggered, you've got blades. That's one. Then, let's see, I got another good one. this one is, I've got one that's up for to be granted. And the government, I think I'm going to make fools out of the patent office. I mean, really, I think so. The priority is established, so I don't mind saying so. But if you had a bayonet with a chisel on the back of it, you know, and you can slide like that, and you got a chisel down here. Like I've got one that I use every morning. I run every day. And I cut stuff out of the way like that, and then I turn it over, and I got a saw. Anyway, marvelous thing. Then, let's see, what else have I got? I've got patents on, that haven't got the patent on that yet. But, and not the devil. My memory is really failing me. That's ridiculous.
Well, that's right. I was just curious, you know, to see if it was...
Yeah, but... you can... I've got a patent on... if you put a fence post... You can put a fence post in the ground.
I've done it.
All right. If it's of sorry wood, it... Or even though you treat it with material like creosote or whatever, in years, whenever that creosote goes bad, then that fence post is going to rot. Okay, you tie a sack, a plastic bag, on that fence post, and you run along there and pull that thing full, and you can go to the next fence post, and you can... You can go to several miles of fence posts in a day. Pour that in there, and it seeps out, and that runs down in the ground. And that's the same as if you took that creosoted or treated fence post and dipped it. Same as if you dug it up.
I see, and dipped it in the stuff.
Same as if you dug it up and dipped it. You just let it run down that post and into the ground. And if I can show you one around here that's been here, that I stuck in the ground. It was a cypress, a small cypress tree. It was not treated till I drove it in the ground and poured creosote on it, and it's been there now about 14 years. and in as good a shape as the day it was put there. So Tom, Dick, and Harry, all in the world he's got to do, it, instead of digging up his fences and putting another damn fence down, is just tie this sack on there and pour it full of creosote or whatever else you want to put on, and whatever else you want to use, and that saves taking the wire down or putting taking the staples out and putting another pole in the ground, and you could, and that way you could keep one post there forever. Okay, I got the patent on that. Well, there's let's see what others are. I could go get the damn things.
No, that's all right. It's no, I'm just, you know, I was interested in I'm interested in your career and how you've developed things, and that's why I asked about the patents.
Well, I I'm just a hard-working man, that's all. I like to I think I'm not lazy. I got to be doing something. I love to work. I love to work. I love to I just admire. I like to work.
Yeah.
If I swing with an axe, I can hit. I can swing an axe and hit the same place twice or close to it. Now sometimes I have hit the exact same place twice. Well, I get a thrill out of that. That's a skill that I like to perfect. I like to do a good job.
Yeah.
I like to swing an axe or whatever it is. And
well, let me ask you now, Tom. When you were talking about Arcadia and people whittling in Arcadia, is that where you grew up as a boy?
Yes, sir.
Would you say that there are, I mean, now, and again, I have no perspective on this. Are there men your age now around the area here or who still live in Arcadia that, you know, you can whittle the same way? See what I'm asking?
Yes. I don't know of anybody in Arcadia now that whittles. I don't know of a wood carver in Arcadia. Mm-hmm. But it used to, see, I remember when people used to come into Arcadia with horse and wagon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a long time ago, every person that, well, I won't say every person, there were some that were not skilled, but so many built their own houses.
Yeah.
So many people in this country built their own houses and built their own furniture. People, it used to be that the demand was that a person had to do it or starve.
Yeah.
He had to, a person was forced to develop all sorts of skills.
Yeah.
And it's not like that now.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody about ranching around Arcadia and fruit, the fruit industry, citrus industry. And he was saying, well, in years gone by, the man out on the ranch would, if he needed a feeder, he just built one. If he needed a windmill, he just built one. And nowadays, of course, they're made out, I guess, apparently out of fiberglass. I mean, you know, the feeders and
sure,
stuff and this kind of thing. But that in the days gone by, that this was just, there wasn't even, nobody even thought about it. I mean, this is what you had to do to be on the ranch.
A person had to do, a long time ago, a person had to do more things for himself than people have to do today. Today you can go to a store and, like my mother used to, at one time my mother cut up seed sacks and made clothes for me and my brother. And there were all sorts of things that and we had a wood stove in the house. I use a wood stove now, and love it. But Tom Dick, today you couldn't have. There are people. I mean, people, they still make wood stoves. Some people use them. But Tom Dick and Eric can't go out just hither, thither, and yon and cut wood like he used to.
Yeah.
Used to go cut wood, and you didn't have to say nothing to nobody. Just go cut you some wood. So that's a, times have changed. It's a thing of the past.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No. When you show me the 3-minute video, you had a, you were showing that if you notch on the wood, or if you make cuts on the cypress, then in time the cypress will grow over those.
Right. You saw that out here.
Yes, sir, and I saw like the bottle and the various things here. So then I take it you've been doing stuff like that since the 30s then. Is that right, or along that line?
Yeah. See, I moved, see, the business started, I don't know exactly when,
that's
but
right.
34, because I just got married, and anyway, started very soon. We moved here, in 37, and one of the reasons why we moved here was I wanted to have cypress knees in my backyard to play with, because for some reason or other, I went back while I was in Arcadia to where I had cut the first knees, and I saw where they were healing over, and I was dumbfounded. I says, my gosh, look at there. What about that? In so many cases, of course, I didn't know then what I know now about a lot of things, but you can cut a lot of trees, and they're dead when you cut them.
Yeah.
But this thing had started healing over. And I says, my gosh. And anyway, several things, my thinking about it was such that I wanted to get somewhere where there was knees in my backyard where I could experiment with them. And out here, I experimented shortly. That is, either late 37 or 38 was when it began. I don't know. But
yes,
I
sir.
Worked there until, and had no idea of having a catwalk there until after the museum was built. The museum was built in 51. And when I first started this thing, I had no idea, period, whatsoever, of ever having a thing like a museum. I was just too dadgum when I'd find something unusual, I just kept that dadgum thing.
Yeah.
And then when we took a vacation, the first one we'd had in 17 years, went north, and the idea hit me on there. I said, my gosh, we got these things been saving all these years, we'll build a museum. And then when I got the museum built, then I didn't think about a catwalk then. But then the owner of Parrot Jungle in Miami, he's dead and gone now. He and some more people were by here, and I took them for a walk out in the swamp. And they just exclaimed about the swamp. Well, the swamp didn't mean nothing to me because I was born in it, you might say.
Yeah.
But when they made over it like they did, and then I says to myself, I says, my God, all I got to do is build, I got all them experiments out there. And I've learned from all those things. I didn't know about all that stuff when it started. I didn't know a damn thing.
Yeah, I know.
And I said, my God, I've got all those experiments. All I got to do is just run this catwalk along there, and I got a show place here. So besides the museum, I got this catwalk. And so that's the way that came about. Just each thing is step by step.
One after the other.
One thing after another. And that was nothing planned out at all, except that I did want to get here where I could get someplace where I could have knees in my backyard. And here's something interesting.
Yes, sir.
Because I don't know whether this is Mount, but anyway, Collier County, Collier's right-hand man, when it was Ed Scott, was a head clerk of court in Collier County or something. Anyway, he saw my knees in St. Petersburg, and he came by when I was in Arcadia, and he came by and said, Tom says, come down and develop the knee thing in Collier County, and we'll give you all the knees in Collier County. We'll give you a house, lights, water, and maybe money. Maybe money. So I went down there and looked around. But down there, it's not strung out. It's anyway, it's a different country, and I turned it down and came here because it used to be that there was, you might say, almost a road from like a golf course from Road 70 down both sides of the creek clear to Lake Okeechobee. I'll show you a picture right now that'll
knock your eyes out. All right. Okay, sir. What we're doing is we're sitting behind the shop, the store, I should say, where cypress knees are sold. And there's so much traffic on the road, that's what we keep picking up here too, and these mosquitoes are eating me up alive. And now we're gonna see an old photo. And here we go. Yes, sir.
People used to come here. And there were 10-foot streamers of moss hanging right here.
Uh-huh.
And it just used to kill my soul. They'd come here and they'd talk about the moss. They'd say, well, what's all that moss? What's all that up there for?
Yeah.
And, but it's gone. It ain't here anymore. Now, here's where you just walked out a while ago, out in the swamp.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It ain't like that now.
Yeah. What happened to all the Spanish moss?
It's gone.
Well, I mean, why?
They drained the state of Florida.
Oh,
they've ruined the state of Florida. Now, the reason I moved to Fish Eating Creek,
mm-hmm.
you see that open place there?
Yes, sir.
See the cypress there?
Yeah.
There ain't nothing in the cypress except just the cypress trees. That's where the water level was. Water got slipped to there. Now, water would come up here every year, and out in the palmettos would be out here, 100 yards, say.
Away from the stream.
Now, right now, from where this picture, where I stood to take this picture, you can't see 50 feet from you for the oak trees and the cabbage palms. That's because the water's been drained in the state of Florida.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Think that's something? Fantastic.
Yeah, these are 8x10 glosses.
That was, that picture right there was taken right across the road, right over yonder, about 50 yards just north.
Yeah. On the back of it says high water mark on cypress trees north of the museum after flood in October 1951. And it is a high mark, man. Yeah.
But the thing that's fantastic is that all that open area that was like a golf course
yeah.
from one end of the creek to the other is gone.
Yeah.
Now there is no all this open space here is filled with oaks and cabbage palms. Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, you want something else? You got some questions?
Well, I'm thinking now. You're telling me a lot of stuff now. You got my mind working. I gotta pick on one
all
subject
right.
rather than,
all
you know,
right,
five things
a month. You can do. I mean, I don't mind talking. I got no secrets. If you can phone, you can write me and ask, or you can come by and
all right,
ask,
sir.
Or anything. Anyway.
All right, sir.
I'll be.
All right.
I don't mind talking.
All right.
I got. And a lot of things like there's a lot of things that's happened that I think people ought to know about.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting. It's fantastic to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm aghast. I what has happened at the state of Florida. It's just unbelievable.
Well, let me ask you something here, Mr. Gaskin, that directly relates to the state of Florida, its present ecology, or whatever you want to call it, and cypress knees. When I said that I was going to come and talk to you, you know, they told me that I was supposed to come down here and talk to you. They were very interested in what you've been doing down here. I mentioned this to somebody, and they said, well, that's how cypress trees breathe, is through their knees. So now I don't, you know, like, I don't know one, that's a tree to me, you know, I mean, I don't know one thing or the other thing, you know. And so,
yes, sir. We'll talk on that.
Yeah.
What about the cypress trees that don't have any knees?
See, then I don't
and
know.
I thought the trees breathe through their leaves.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
Well,
so.
But anyway, somebody said that that's what they're there for, is to for the trees to breathe through.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it does seem to be a fact that where the water gets deeper, the knees get taller. Except there are some cases that doesn't work. And as to why knees grow in the first place, I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
There is, I've not seen anything else that if it's even kin to a knee, except I can't think of the name, it's over towards China, Formosa, somewhere over there is a tree that has a growth that is thin, like my hand is thin.
Yes, sir.
And it has a projection that comes up from the root and grows up. I saw some about this high. There was a man here one time who was with Exxon Company, and he was over there looking for oil.
Mm-hmm.
and he saw this material. Other than that, I don't know of anything else that's like cypress knees, but it's what's interesting. I mean, a lot of things are coming up interesting about it. I heard just the other day that they're growing in Central America, in Belize, and we have knees in the museum from I forget how many states, and I've seen a picture of them growing in England. But they were transplanted there.
Yeah, I was
but they're
say.
Doing real good there. And I understand that there's a lake between Switzerland and Milan, Italy, that has cypress growing on it. And I gather from it that it's a natural thing. And we had a letter from the people there on the island that made me think they were going to send us one. And write about it, but we haven't gotten anything done from it.
Yeah.
But there's an awful lot of funny things about this cypress knee thing. They grow in, like, in New York, you know, and you saw them in the museum from all those different states. I was flabbergasted when I found out about that, when people would come here and tell me about knees growing in different places. I had no idea. I just thought it was Florida and maybe Louisiana. Simple. Okay, what's next?
Do they make, now maybe I've got this wrong, when you make a briar pipe, is that from cypress, or where do they make briar pipes from?
I could not answer that.
Yeah, because it's some sort of wood, and I thought it was, again, in relationship to cypress.
No, I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Stretch my legs out here with you.
Come again.
I just want to stretch my legs out. Well, now, in all the years that you've been here, do you feel that, and it sounds like a lot of people have come and talked to you, and I'm sure newspaper people have come and talked to you and stuff like that. Has it grown in interest over time? I mean, maybe the business end of it may not have been, you know, skyrocketing, but has the interest in it grown over time or what?
Oh, yeah. It's a progressing thing. It's progressing, and people are recognizing it more and more and more every day as they go by. This you heard about the Johnny Carson thing?
No, sir.
Well, I told you about how I showed it to New York World's Fair, and we've had and the newspapers have been good to us ever since we've been in this business. The newspapers, Miami Herald, Tampa Tribune, etc., etc. And but never did anything happen like just the other day. On November the 19th, I went to California, and I had to get on the Johnny Carson show. And we have had hundreds of people here since then because of that show. And everybody and his brother is talking about the damn thing.
Oh, I see. So you just went on the show and you just talked about cypress, the same thing like we've been saying here?
Right. I've got a copy of it here. I could show it to you if you wanted to see it.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. I mean, you know, I'm serious.
Let me see if I can.
I don't know. Wait a minute. I might.
All right. Okay.
I might not.
That's all right. But I'm just. If you do, I'd like to see it.
All right. Because it's a weird thing.
Okay, we're going to call the end of the tape.